you know, thinking of Mother's Day. And then, of course, we have Father's Day not too terribly far off. And I was thinking about what parents want. What do moms want? I see my father, who is 84 now, or soon to be 84, is that right? But 84, and he knows he's got more years behind him instead of what's in front of him. But he knows he's headed to eternity soon, and he's going to be in heaven. And he's at peace with that, and he said often how he would just rather accelerate the process and get there. He's tired. But you know what? The thing that he wants more than anything else, he wants to be secure in what his kids are doing. Now, his youngest kid is over 50. That's me. But you know what? I'm still his kid. And when you think about it, you can look at it this way. He isn't so concerned about money. He's not concerned about the materials. What he's concerned about is eternity for his kids and for his grandkids. That is what he values above anything else. And it might be hard to grasp, but I think another thing, just kind of a visual to give you, it's kind of like if you're out in the ocean and you're getting tired. You're getting tired of swimming. And you don't have a boat. You don't have a life preserver. You don't know what's going to come up and bite at you. But you know what? If somebody came to you at that point and said, "Hey, here's 100 pounds of gold. Let me give it to you." What value is that gold to you? It's not. Now it becomes a curse. And you're not going to hold on to that. So, you know what? I was thinking about moms in the Bible. But I was thinking specifically about the moms who weren't named. There were a lot of moms that just weren't even named. I think of David. And I did some research on David's mom. Well, she's not named in our scriptures at all. And then I did some research of what the Jewish teaching is about the mom. And there's a lot of debate in there. And I decided, you know what? I need to just stick with what's written right here. That's what I need to do. Because that got really interesting really fast. But I got to stick with what's here. Because that I know it's true. I hold the truth right here. Everything else, I don't know. So one of the things my wife asked for today was a short sermon for Mother's Day. There's 3 pages here. She offered to take 2. So can we possibly imagine a man like David that his mother had no impact on him? No. You just can't even go there. You just know that there was a great impact. But of course, it was a mother and a father. And we know his father was Jesse. But let's think about what mothers and fathers, what we work for. And what I saw, of course, my parents work for. You know, there's 3 general categories. You know, safety and health for the children, right? We do that. Think about all the different things we do to keep our children safe and to keep them healthy. But then we teach them how to do that for themselves because we can't always be there. Giving the child a stable home, something that they can grasp, that base, because life's going to be brutal at points. It's going to be ugly. But do they have stability that they can go back to, whether they're 5 years old, 15 years old, 45 years old? Do they have a family that they can cling to? Do they have that stability? Parents also work for the success of their children. That is really important to me, to give our kids the tools to be successful. Now, the definition of success could be all over the place, right? What's the world's definition of success versus the success spiritually? It could be a wide range. Now, you know what? Today, I'm going to focus in really on the story of David. And I remember going to church, but going to what we used to have, and you guys probably don't know what it is, the younger people here, we had what was called junior church, okay? And it was where our parents were in the main service, and us younger people were in, just a smaller people service. And so we would go through and read these stories. And I remember at different times going, I've heard this one. And, I'd get a bad attitude and I wouldn't listen. But you know what? Here's something really cool that has happened as an adult. I started reading the story of David. Do you think I learned something new? I just read the scriptures. Not anybody's commentary. Just read the scriptures. And then I kept reading and reading and reading. I was like, wait. I got to focus in on something. This is getting too broad. It was fascinating. And actually, I've got questions now because of some of the things that I read. It's kind of cool to me. And it's exciting. What's in here? I've read this. I got to reread it. There's more in here. So when I think of parents and what they invest, I think of David. Now, David's parents were preparing him for battles in life. They were preparing him for success, right? What was the first big battle that you can think of for David? Anybody?
Goliath.
All right. I hear a great voice over there. All right. Goliath. That's right. That was a big battle.
The bear and the
lion was before Goliath. Don't you think that was kind of like preparation for Goliath? Absolutely. Absolutely. So I like both answers. They're actually correct. Can anybody in here under the age of 10 tell me what book of the Bible that the story of David is in? There you go. Okay, yes.
First Samuel.
That's right. First Samuel is correct. So let's jump to 1 Samuel 16. Now I'm going to do a lot of reading here, but you know what? I look at this and I say, how can I tell the story better than what's written right here in the scripture? How can I do that? I can't. So we're just going to read a lot of it. Now, I'm going to get the main parts, and I've cut out stuff that, we can go back and read another time. And it came to pass when they were come that he looked on Eliab and said, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. Now, this is Samuel. When God told him, go find the new king. Now, did God tell him, oh, this is the king's name, this is where you go exactly? He just said, go. And so he met Jesse, and he knew it was going to be one of Jesse's sons. And let's read. But the Lord said unto Samuel, look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord seeth not as man seeth. For man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. Then Jesse, the father, called Abinadab, and made him pass before Samuel. And he said, neither hath the Lord chosen this. Samuel's a quick learner. Okay, actually, Samuel's really smart. Talk about his mom. She was named, and that's an incredible story there. But Samuel learned right away. God taught him instantly, don't be looking at what you see. You listen to what I'm telling you. So the first time he learned. So the second time he's like, all right, Lord, what are we doing? And then Jesse made Shammah to pass by, and he said, neither hath the Lord chosen this. Again, Jesse made seven of his sons pass before Samuel, and Samuel said unto Jesse, the Lord hath not chosen these. And Samuel said unto Jesse, are here all thy children? And he said, there remaineth yet the youngest, and behold, he keepeth the sheep. And Samuel said unto Jesse, send and fetch him, for we will not sit down till he come hither. And he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy. Does anybody know what ruddy means? Okay. To me, ruddy means he was no wuss. Okay, he was no sissy. This guy, he understood what it was like. He was extreme sports before extreme sports, okay? He was into it. He would not back off of things. And if as we read, we're going to see what he did and the way he approached things. And so he was ruddy and withal of a beautiful countenance and goodly to look to. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brethren, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. So Samuel rose up and went to Ramah. If we look at the scriptures over and over again, God will take the least. He'll take the smallest. He'll take the run of the group. This is the run of the group, right? The run of the litter, the smallest. It's amazing how God sets up the contrast over and over in the scriptures. Here it is, David, think about this, and there's a backstory to this, but think about, he's number eight. He's much younger than his older brothers. There's quite a gap between them. And his older brothers were not a fan. Whatever the conflict was, there was conflict, but they were not a fan of the little brother. And the father was kind of caught in between, it sounds like. And so what happens is he's out there getting the worst job. If you chose a career in that day and time and say, what's the job that I can get guaranteed? That's the job that nobody else wants? Shepherd, check, you got it. Okay. And notice how many people God used that were shepherds or in that line of work. All through the scripture. So here it is. He's got the lowest job. Now, fast forward. He comes from the fields. He smells like sheep and other things related to sheep, okay? But you know what? He protected those sheep, didn't he? Okay, you already mentioned the bear, the lion, and you know what? He went after them. He took those sheep and he said, they're my job. He took it seriously. He didn't sit back and go, hey, you know what? I finally found a comfortable rock. I'm not moving. You can have one. I got others here. No problem. He didn't do that. He actually said, no, they're my responsibility. You know what I think of too? He could be the one sitting there going, I got the stinking job, literally. I got a job that nobody else wanted. I got stuck out here. What a ripoff. I don't think he had that attitude. He took whatever job God gave him, he took it and he said, I'm going to do my best. So much to the point that he went after a bear and a lion. He didn't wait for them to come. When you read the actual story, he went after them. Said, okay, you got mine. Now I'm going to get my sheep back. He actually recovered the sheep. Okay? Just impressive. Now, let's think about this. He's disregarded by his brother. He's kind of like, okay, his dad's still his dad. And then all of a sudden, he finds himself where? Fast forward to he's in the palace with the king. How'd that happen? You know what he did with his time? He learned to be a marksman, didn't he? Okay. What kind of gun did he have? Nothing. He made it himself. Have you ever tried to take a slingshot? And I've done this as a kid. We tried because we didn't have anything else to do. And what we did was we took a little pouch and we put strings on the side of it and we put rocks in there. We really didn't. And we tried to find the smooth ones like David found in the creek, you know, before he went after Goliath. And so what happened was, you know, we whipped this. Man, we hit ourselves. It was terrible. And then we try to like, okay, David could do it. We could do it. We could never figure it out. And that's the weapon that he created for himself. Nobody gave it to him. He created it, I'm quite sure. Because guess what he had? Time. He's with the sheep. But you know what? He got pretty good. So I bet when he didn't have that bear to go after, he was probably doing some sort of target practice, don't you think? He was using the skills and refining the skills that God gave to him. He gave him the idea how to make this thing, or he saw somebody else make it. He used what he had. And think about this. He also had time to learn how to play an instrument. What instrument did he learn how to play? Harp. That's right. Okay. So when God put onto Saul this spirit that really made him uneasy, he just couldn't settle down. He's like, I got to have something. And then the word went out that he could get this young guy that plays a harp really, really well. Yeah, I want that guy. So he comes in, plays. Saul is at rest. This is all by God's design. You got to go back and read this. I'm skipping so much. So what happens, he's now there, and he's playing, and Saul's liking this, and this is all good. And then all of a sudden, boom, there's a battle. Let's move to chapter 17. So God uses conflicts. He uses them all the time. He uses them today. And what happens, think about it, even this conflict of what's going on with how to deal with the virus. There's a lot of conflict, right? How to manage it, our leaders, how they're managing things. And it really reveals a lot of things about a lot of people. So, chapter 17, verse 3. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on the side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. And there went out a champion of the camp and of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. Okay, what does that mean in English? That means about 9 foot, 9 inches tall. He couldn't stand up here. Okay, 9 foot, 9 inches tall. That's intimidating. Okay, it's huge. All right, now, like, well, maybe he's just tall and skinny. Nah, well done. And he had a helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. And in mail, we're not talking about paper mail that comes to the U.S. Post Office. We're talking about this armor that was a bunch of links of like mini chain together. And it was designed so that if a spear came in or a sword came in, it wouldn't penetrate it. And the weight of that coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. Okay, English again, right? What is that? That's about 78 pounds. Okay, Sam, how much do you weigh? Okay, I think he's about around that. So it's like wearing a Sam on you, okay? That's just this part. What about his sword? What about his helmet? All of these different things. I mean, you're adding weight. This had to be a big guy and still be able to function and fight and swing and everything else and not completely exhaust himself. So, and he had greaves of brass upon his legs. I have no idea what that is. And a target of brass between his shoulders, and the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam. That means pretty big. Because weaver's beams had to be heavy to serve their purpose. And his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron. I think that was about 12 pounds. And if you think, oh, that's not much, you try to move it and carry it. And one bearing a shield went before him. And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, why are ye come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine and ye servants to Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then he will be, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us. Okay, you talk about, it's a clear plan, what he's laid out. Not a desirable plan. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. Then Saul and Israel heard those words of the Philistine. They were dismayed and greatly afraid. I get it. I would be intimidated too. Come on. To say, oh, I wouldn't have been afraid. There's a boxer from a long time ago, Mike Tyson. Not the greatest life example, but there were some words of wisdom from him every once in a while. He says, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. And you know what? It's true. It's true. So we can talk about what we would do, but let's not be so quick. So let's jump. There's a lot of story I'm jumping. So we're going to jump to verse 21. So Jesse sent David, his father sent David to, he pulled him out of the field again, because as soon as he left Saul, because Saul had to go back, he had to go to battle, then David's like, well, I'm going back to my sheep. And so he has to go back and do his job. Well, then Jesse calls him up and says, hey, go take some stuff to your brothers, and here's some food, and here's some other things and provisions and stuff, because they've been camping out. They've been going back and forth for like 40 days, I think it was. And so David, you know, like, hey, some action. I'm going. And so he did. Verse 21, for Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army, and David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper, that's when he arrived there, and ran into the army and came and saluted his brethren, and he talked with them. Behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him, and were sore afraid. And the men of Israel said, have ye seen this man that has come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up, and he shall be that man who killeth him. The king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to that man that killeth this Philistine, and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine, that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him after this manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that killeth him. So they're all going, hey, yeah, somebody's going to step up. Somebody's going to step up. But nobody's stepping up. And it's kind of embarrassing, because you know what? They probably had some guys that were big, well-seasoned warriors, some big boys, some boys you don't want to mess with. They're not stepping up, are they? And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men. Because that's what David was saying. It's like, what are you guys backing down? What's the deal? Who's going to step up? Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake up to the men. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David. And he said, why camest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? Wow, that's a smackdown, isn't it? Hey, your job's a shepherd. What are you doing here? We're fighting a war, which they really weren't. So, I know the pride. All right, here's the other smackdown. I know the pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. And David said, what have I now done? Okay, now that shows history, doesn't it? That has context right there. Okay, because it sounds like his brothers are always on him. Is there not a cause? Uh-oh, he's ramping up again, isn't he? And he turned from him toward another and spake after the same manner. And the people answered him again after the former manner. And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul. And he sent for him. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Guys, think about this. This is a shepherd boy that's telling warriors, you're not manning up. That's what's happening here. The setting is very uncomfortable. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight this with this Philistine. Guys, look at the contrast. Pay attention to the contrast all the way through this. This is where it really begins. And Saul said to David, thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. Okay, He has, how many times do you think David's heard what he can't do? Somebody's telling him, you can't do that, you can't do that, you can't do that. You can't fight a lion. He probably couldn't convince his brothers that he fought a lion and saved the sheep. Or the bear. And the brothers are going, yeah, right. He probably did come back with a bear rug, though. So, you know what? You know, and hey, you know, that hurts if somebody calls him a liar. So, he's got Saul telling him, the king saying, not going to happen. You're going to get slaughtered. And David said unto Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep. All right, here's the credentials. And there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock, and I went after him. He didn't wait for him. He went after him. It's very clear, right? All right, this is no wuss. And smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. David said, moreover, the Lord hath delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear. He will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said unto David, go, and the Lord be with thee. And Saul armed David with his armor. Here's a contrast again. Pay attention to this. And he put a helmet of brass upon his head. Also he armed him with a coat of mail. And David girded his sword upon his armor, and he essayed to go, for he had not proved it. And David said unto Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them. And David put them off him. Right? Contrast here. Who's he up against? We heard about all the armor, all the weight of it, all the massive tools that this guy had. And he took his staff in his hand. Uh-oh, he's back in shepherd boy mode, isn't he? Okay. And chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag. These are his tools. The staff, stones, shepherd's bag, and then his sling. It was in hand, and he drew near to the Philistine, and the Philistine came on and drew near unto David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. So, you know what? Think about it. That's really 2 against 1, because the man bearing the shield, Goliath wasn't carrying the shield. It clearly says a man was carrying it before him. So it's really kind of ridiculous that he's doing that. If he said man to man, get rid of the shield. Anyways, that's just my opinion. And the Philistine came on, drew unto David, and that bear the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him. He was insulted. For he was but a youth and ruddy and of fair countenance. Okay, he's a youth and he's a good-looking kid. He ought to be a model somewhere. Okay, so instead of coming out being a warrior. And the Philistine said unto David, am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. And then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. Did he have tools? Yes. Did he cite those tools right there? No. Because the ultimate, he knew, he was there under God's authority. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee, and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air, and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. You know what? I always thought that was violent. Really violent. Overboard, unnecessary. But I've come to realize that he had to do it to send a message. Because there's so many that could say, well, you really didn't defeat them. We don't see any evidence of it. You know, that's kind of like dealing. I mean, they had their own mainstream media back then, okay? So just like we have news today, we can't believe what we're being told. So he had to make it absolutely black and white, clear as can be. No. This is the way it really happened. That's why you see all the dead people. All right, so, and all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. And it came to pass, when the Philistine arose and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hasted and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. That's the guy's method. He's going into battle. He's not waiting for the battle to come to him. His heart was really well prepared for him to do what he's doing. He's going after the problem. He's not waiting for the problem. And David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone and slung it and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell upon his face to the earth. It didn't knock him out, folks. It broke through his skull. That's what that says. That was a very precise shot from a marksman. That's what that was. So David prevailed over the Philistine with the sling and with the stone and smote the Philistine and slew him, but there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran and stood upon the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of the sheath thereof and slew him and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. And the men of Israel and of Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines until thou come to the valley and to the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistine fell down by the way. So, you know, they chased him down, basically. They chased him down. That's the best summary I've got of this story. The contrasts in there are great. You know, you think about it. What are we doing as parents? Moms? Dads? What are we doing? We're teaching our kids to be safe. Keeping them healthy. Moms are best about making sure the children learn to practice clean habits, right? That thing on the floor when their babies are crawling around. We got plenty of babies around here. And what do? They're putting everything in their mouth. Well, what are the parents doing, especially moms? The moms are going, whoa. So they're teaching them what's appropriate. They're not able to make those decisions right now, but they're going to get to a point to where they can make better decisions the older that they get. It's just, how do you eat? What's the proper stuff to eat? Ultimately, I think moms and dads, as believers, what we're doing is we're teaching our children to make the right decisions so they can make the right decisions when we're no longer around. Okay, when they're away from us, whether it's away from us for 10 minutes or 10 years or whatever the time frame is. Okay, because there's going to be a separation. I think the most important thing to teach, though, is get God's approval first. What did David do? Did he go out and like, yeah, I'm a bad boy. I'm going to go whip this Goliath. I'm going to do this. He didn't do that. He got God's approval first. He equipped. He prepared. He honed his skills that he had that God gave him. And he kept doing that. And he was constantly preparing. But it just wasn't one thing to say, oh, I'm good at this. I'm good at throwing rocks in a sling. No. He learned how to play an instrument too. But he was very well studied. And how did that work? If he spent so much of his time as a shepherd, shepherds are not well educated, are they? Was David well educated? He was. I have to believe that he took whatever opportunities he could to listen carefully to those people he was around that he knew were godly people. And he absorbed that. He made it his job to listen. My kids actually are tired of hearing that phrase. Your job is to listen. Okay, and none of the kids are laughing in here because they're all going, I don't like that either. And every parent has heard that phrase from their child. I didn't hear you. You didn't say that. And the older they get, they're like, yeah, you definitely didn't say that. No, I'll stand you down on that one. Okay. But the reality is your job is to listen. So make sure that we understand here that David was intentional about listening. That's the only way he got his education. Stable home environment. You know what? Having both parents around, that helps. Having an honorable family name, because the family's doing things right. The parents are striving for godly things. Having a peaceful home. I mean, all of these are intertwined. Having a peaceful home. You know what? There's no family without conflicts. Come on. If anybody says, hey, we all get along in our, we never have conflict in our house. Well, you might say that, but I know what you do have in your house, somebody that lies. all right, so we all have conflict. It's true. And now that we're going to start having in-laws, we're probably going to have some more. So, you know, it's you work at it, you work through things. But you know what? Having the perfect life and having the perfect setting that you come from isn't the basis for excellence and for godliness. Not having it is not an excuse either. So we don't use that excuse of, hey, this is what happened to my family. It was terrible and terrible. And you know, you're arguing against people, but you can end up arguing against God ultimately and saying, God, you know, hey, I didn't have my mom around, or I didn't have my dad around, or this happened at my household, the way I grew up. God doesn't, he didn't buy excuses. Why are we trying to sell him something he just doesn't buy? So think about it. Whatever God gives us, let's take it and build on it. So success. You know, you think about it. His education, I already mentioned. He was alone as a shepherd. He sought out that knowledge. He listened to godly teachers. He studied God's creation. Imagine him, and you look at his writings, look at David's writings, and look at how much he refers to the evidence of God's creations, of his creation overall. And he does that over and over and over. So he was a student even when he was alone, and he had no books and no teachers. He was still a student. He's a musician, a marksman. He used his abilities. And you know what happens when we use our abilities that God gives us? He shows us more. He does. But you know the opposite's true. If we sit back and we're like, hey, yeah, I can do that. Fine, check, done. That's what I'm known for. No, that's not the way God functions. We just missed out on a bunch of blessings because we refused to use our abilities and to stretch ourselves and grow. So we lose out if we get that mindset. So relationships. You know what? Success in relationships, that matters a lot. Here's this guy that was not getting along with his brother so well, some conflict there. He's alone as a shepherd, but still, he was hungry for a relationship. Some of you are wanting that relationship, that friendship, that relationship that you just don't have yet beyond the family. And I've heard that a lot from people throughout the years, young people, like, you know what, I just don't even have a best friend. And they're sad about that. But you know what? David didn't have that until Jonathan. And, you know, conflict there because Jonathan's father, King Saul, was trying to kill him. But they're still friends. And there's this great history about friendship after Jonathan was dead. That friendship still continued. And there's just a cool story about that. All right, so an honorable name. Even though he's poorly regarded by his brothers, now he's highly acclaimed by nearly everybody. He had ambition. Guys, that's missing in so many people's lives. Ambition, that is missing. He pushed to refine his skills. As shepherd, think about it, as shepherd, the lowest job in the land, ultimately, he got the highest job in the land. Think about the contrast there, guys. Think about that. Could it happen if he didn't have ambition? No. I mean, it's just amazing to think of how God takes the least and takes them to the greatest. You know, when you think about it, there's that book of Do Hard Things. Have you guys, anybody ever read that book in here? Do Hard Things. Okay. It is a good book. Truett, what are your thoughts? You think that? You didn't read the book?
My sister read the book.
But
I'm like,
it was too hard. Emmett, you read the book?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Was it worth reading?
Yes.
Okay. Did it challenge you?
Yes.
Okay. Don't give me just the answer that you think I want to hear. I want a real answer. Is that a real answer?
Yes.
slight delay there. So ambition. I see quite a contrast too with different people that have worked with me. Working with me, I've mentioned this before, is not easy. Okay? My kids will attest to that. Is that right, Emmett? Okay. All right. So working with me can be undesirable because we run hard, long days. Now, 9 days aren't quite as long because of my age, but you know what? I see the guys working and I see them using their abilities, and you know, I see my guys stepping up and they get through a project and all they want to do is just finish the project because it's harder to work for a parent than it is to work for somebody else. That's just the truth, okay? But, you know, here it is. We bring in, I've had the Oxendine guys come in, and that team came in and worked, and these guys hustled and hit it hard, great attitudes, because I'm not their dad, right? And the same thing with the Kunkelmans. They come, they help, and they're working hard, and they got a great attitude, they got something to prove, again, because I'm not their dad. But it's obvious what their parents have taught them, and that's the way my guys function, I'm pretty sure, when they're working for somebody else, and they step up, and they do a really good job. But you know what? That's ambition. It's kind of like, yeah, I got something to prove. That's a good thing to prove. And using those abilities and with a great attitude. My boys always like it when somebody else is over to work because they say I'm nicer. They're right. All right, but guys, the last 2 days, have I been nicer? What's the delay? There's a delay. Moving on. Now, I will say contrast here is I have been in situations to where I get in management mode and I want to get something done, right? And then I'll say to somebody like, hey, you need to pick that up, or can you pick that up and grab that and take it over here? And I've had this experience over and over, but one comes to mind, probably about 14 years old. He looked at me like, and who are you? Knowing who I am, but his attitude is like, no. His actions were very consistent with his attitude because he turned and he walked away and he looked at me like, and disgusted with the very thought that I would ask him to help. There's your contrast. The thing is, that's a maturity thing, yes. But you know what? If a person doesn't change from that, they're going to pay a price and they're going to keep paying it. And keep paying it and keep paying it because they have failed to see the value in contributing. We were created by a maker. I know that's redundant, but we were created by a maker, right? Is God a maker or is he a taker? He's more of a maker. We are created in his image. We need to contribute. We need to add value to whatever situation we're in. One of the greatest things you can do whenever you're around somebody else, especially in their house, look for something that you can help with. I am absolutely uncomfortable going to somebody else's house without being able to help in some way. Clean up something, wash something. There's got to be something I can do. It is uncomfortable to me, and I think that's actually a good thing. You know, I know a guy in his 30s. I know a lot of guys like this, but one guy comes to mind. And he's that guy that maybe at 14, 15 years old was like, I ain't doing that. And he's always had this attitude of, he's working. This is the only work he really does. He works at avoiding work. Think about that. And his sport is to get out of work and then brag about it. Okay? Now he's in his 30s, and what has happened with his life? It's nothing desirable. It's nothing admirable. But you know what? You can't separate it from the fact that he has ended up in and out of jail so many times. There's just a myriad of issues that come with this heart, with this attitude of taking. David's a great example. But you know what? David ultimately decided for himself. And when he decided for himself that he was going to choose to go after the problem, go after the work, go after the really hard stuff. I think the really hard stuff is going after a bear. I think the really hard stuff is going after a lion. I mean, these are hard. I don't know if it's harder to go after Goliath. I don't know. But it's hard. All of it's hard. I know that much. But he chose to go after it. Do you think his mom was proud? Do you think his dad was proud? Maybe his dad, whatever the issue was, if there was an issue, with some conflict where he was not as pleased or as impressed, or I don't know what it was about his youngest son, whatever the deal might have been, conflict there. But do you think that might have changed when he became... But do you think that might have changed when he became the warrior, the king? God was preparing David. What was David best known for? What did God say about David? What did God say about him? I don't know. I cannot say that God could say that about me. I don't know that. I couldn't stand here and say, oh yeah, well, I'm working towards that, or I think it'd be pretty arrogant if I did anyways, but that is a standard. There is no standard above that, is there? There's no standard greater than that. But that standard ultimately honors mom. It honors dad. That's what parents want. When you think about the guy that I mentioned in his 30s, his parents, his mom passed away. But his mom, as a believer, never got to see her son make that turning point, make that decision for himself. He was taught, but he refused. And what happened was his mom went on to eternity. I don't know if he's a believer for sure or not. It's not my... I don't judge that. I can't judge it. Ultimately, God knows his heart. But you know what? You think about this. He's always stressed, anxious, nervous. He's frustrated. He sometimes lashes out in anger because of all these things, because they're unknown. He doesn't have a plan because he's refused all of his foundation. And I've had enough conversations with people, the parents of young people that are all of this. They're angry. They're frustrated. They don't know what to do. They don't know where they're going. But if we look at all of these principles and we apply what's in the written manual, this is our life manual right here. Reread it. Get back into it. You'll find examples in it over and over and over. So work, it's not a curse, is it? Work existed before sin, right? So it was perfect. Everything before sin was perfect. And that includes work. It's a privilege. When God sees us joyfully use our abilities, He reveals more abilities for us. I mentioned that a few minutes ago. David wasn't perfect, but he lived a great life close to God and honored his parents. Where's David now? Heaven, without a doubt. He won, didn't he? He won the ultimate battle, didn't he? Don't lose out. Go with your design. Pursue God. Your design is to work. Your design is to improve yourself and to grow. Get better than what this world offers. What is that one guy that is making a lot of money because he says he's a preacher? Your best life ever or something like that? You know what? Get better than what this world offers. And that's heaven. What do we love to see as parents? We love to see that change when that child adopts biblical principles for their own. They're not just following our rules anymore. We see that they're making that decision themselves. So the greatest gift that we can offer parents, mothers, fathers, is when we make that choice. That is something that's a process. And instead of saying it, we need to just do it. And whether you're 13, whether you're 25, whether you're 51, if you haven't made that choice, start now. Because if you want to honor your parents, you can't lose with that.